although I had kind of hoped for the actual crow voices. It was a good job. Thank you. So good morning. And to tie this morning a little bit with last week's sermon, I'd like to mention that my favorite of the seven deadly sins is sloth. Gluttony runs a close second, but sloth is definitely first because I'm naturally lazy. I seek an easy life and would much rather be backpacking through the wilderness, I think, because the choices are really simple. Brown sugar or not with the oatmeal. And all the things that I'm supposed to be trying to fix, like greed and injustice, are muted out by the wind and the rain and the sun. So one of the one result of my sloth is that actually I get kind of nervous when I come up here. It's true. And I ask myself, what do I really have to share? What do I have to say? And when I had an opportunity to share a lesson last fall, that was my personal best, at Friedenswald, because I read from a range of authors who were really inspirational, and they were helping us see how nature, we can help us find God in ourselves through nature, and we had a great rendition of Paul McCartney's Blackbird, and I find inspiration in writings from other people, because there's so much great stuff out there. And so this morning, we'll turn to the ancient writings from Psalms, Acts, and John. In Psalms, we'll hear of joy. In Acts, we'll read that even Gentiles can hear Jesus' message. And in John, we'll read that the greatest way to show love for your friends is to be willing to die for them. Whew. Okay, more on that later. More on that later. Another way I compensate for my sloth and feelings of inadequacy, I guess, is that I use big words. You know, if I can't dazzle people, I will baffle them. like casually slipping in the word exegesis, you know, to interpret the text like the Bible. And I can imagine the eyes of teenagers starting to glaze over already. And there are a fair number of young people who may have hit a point in their lives where they're asking the question, why do we go to church anyways? If you're a young person, 11 to 19, give me a little wave out there. Put your hand up there just to see that you're paying attention out there. All right? I'm thinking of you. I'm thinking of you this morning. I am. I have you in mind. And so I ask, why are we here? Why are you here? Well, one of the reasons, I think, is that we should feel good. We should feel good here. We should feel uplifted in times of sorrow and uplifting in times of joy. And if we start with Psalms 98 and the last bit that I really liked, we can start with joy. Blow trumpets and horns and shout for joy to the Lord, our King. Roar, sea, and every creature in you. Sing, earth and all who live on you. Clap your hands, you rivers. You hills, sing together with joy before the Lord. We should feel good. We should feel good. So I would like you to take this moment, just this moment, and think back last week at something that made you feel good. A moment last week, you know? Flowers, sunshine, somebody smiling, a thank you. Think in your minds, if you even have to close for a second, I can remember a moment where I thought, ah, that made me feel good. All right? Think of that and feel good. So a reason is to feel better. One reason to be here, feel better, if not joy. And what is another reason? Well, I think that church reminds us of what we can be. I find myself inspired by all of you to work well, do justice, try to be a good friend, and envision a better world. That's what I get from you, each and every one of you. We are reminded that we can make the world a better place, and Jesus says that we are all good and worthy. We are all good and worthy, and I'm a person who believes that we are all trying to do the best we can. One of the things that we can do, we can be reminded of when we come here, is to try to be the best we can and to do better. Do a little better. What is possible? Who can we help next week one person feel a little better, or maybe a whole group of people? And really, how hard could that be? Well, I found it's hard to be better. Really hard. So let's start by remembering that you, all of you, every person in this room matters. Teenagers, you matter. Children, you matter. Young adults, my contemporaries, and our elders. I mean, young adults, my contemporaries, and my elders. I suggest that one reason you are here is to reflect that you can do a little better this week. And that is a great thing. And of course, not only do you matter, but all the people outside this room matter, and not just the people that you know. This is one of the challenges in today's teachings: love and seek out the stranger. Thank you for that title. In the words of Carole King, you've got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. Because people are going to treat you better. You're going to find, yes, you will, that you're beautiful as you feel. Showing love. But it's harder than just saying that. And I suspect very few of us spring out of bed in the morning with a smile on our face, right? But eventually we should get to that smile to help show people our love. And I believe that's another message in these verses in the Bible. We read that we are to love one another as Jesus has loved us. And presto, the kingdom is ours here on earth. And I guess that's it. I could almost end, but my small group told me I was supposed to fill 25 to 30 minutes. Okay, more like, right, 12 to 15. So let's think of this matter of love further. Who is worthy of love? Apparently everybody. Peter and the Jewish congregants were amazed that even the Gentiles could hear Jesus' message of love and see the light. Even the Gentiles. And I think that's profound. I just love that when I read it. Think about it. Assuming that no one, or at least very few of us in the room, are Jewish, we were on the outs. We were different. We were beneath the love of Christ and membership in the club. We would have been denied church. Do you hear that, teens? When the church started, some very important church leaders thought you weren't allowed. But here it is, even the Gentiles. And what is that message? What is that message now to us? When we see someone who is outside, as in the stories, in the children's story, we should think all are worthy of love. Now, don't get me wrong. And this is a hard part. We've heard it many times, but not all actions are worthy of love. In fact, many actions need to be opposed. They need to be crushed or denied. But as Martin Luther King Jr. reminded us in the face of racism and intolerance, our actions to oppose evil should be rooted in love. I believe that the message here is not only that we interact with people who may be different than ourselves, but we should seek them out and welcome them. Which is, of course, easier for extroverts than introverts, but we can all do it quietly, one person at a time. One step further in loving our neighbor as God loves us is the notion of being willing to die for our friends. Wow. So how do we die for our friends? Right? Now, I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands to see who's, you know, hold up 1 to 5, how many friends you'd be willing to die for, or something like that. And it would really kind of change that whole social media thing. Like, you'd have to acquaintance yourself instead of friend. You know, that person's my acquaintance. Right? If that was a criteria. But think, Jesus went willing to die for his friends. And I've been thinking about this for quite a while. I mean, what does that mean for me? What's that mean day to day? I suppose it means that we need to be willing to go the last mile, the full way for our friends. Maybe spill some sweat and tears and blood. And there are certainly people and causes for which I may be willing to die for. But really, how would a lesson on that help our teens, or even all of us this week, get through the next week? Right? Because that's big stuff. So see if this makes sense. This is where I kind of branched out a little bit. Denying yourself is a form of dying for another. You want to do something, and you do not. You do not do it for the benefit of others, and I think it's a metaphor for dying. Have you ever held your tongue for a friend, family member, or close acquaintance when they've expressed a disagreeable opinion or said something that's just plain incorrect? I have, once. True. Holding my tongue is clearly a growth area for me. But even Janine has admitted that after 23 years of marginal improvement, I am better. I do practice holding my tongue on occasion and or vetting, better yet, vetting an idea with one person before saying it out loud and exploding. I got her to laugh. Okay. I don't always succeed, but it's better. But what if I was on the other end of the spectrum, right? And I was a person who could hold their tongue in the most extraordinary circumstances and not speak out, right? And I guess for them, you know, for me, dying is to be quiet, and for them, dying is to speak out. Well, what do I mean by that? It's becoming a different person. It's becoming a different person. I am one person, and then I change. I saw the most amazing acts of courage when the Goshen High School changed its mascot. Truly, people whose worst nightmare of is public speaking stood up in front of an entire auditorium, and they spoke truth to power. I was in awe. I saw shy people die a little bit and become a new person and speak in front of a large group of often hostile people. And they said enough. Remarkable. But what did that take? What transition did that take? So for me, the small step and what I take away from this passage is to change, right? To die a little bit for the others. And I think maybe another metaphor for dying for one's friends is the act of forgiveness and extending grace. We're surrounded every day by actions and people we do not understand. Our feelings get hurt. People are mean. And there are some times when people say, I just cannot forgive that action, that person. I just cannot. And that's okay. Start small. We're gathered here to remember that we can do better. We can forgive small transgressions and work to bigger things. We can identify our urge for revenge. If you have pain, you should acknowledge it. And if you can, share it with others. But the challenge is to take that pain and try to turn it into something good. Pain is real. Pain is telling you mentally or physically that something's wrong and you should do something to fix it. Sometimes the urge, my urge even, is to strike back, actively or passively. But that striking back person needs to die, because just striking back doesn't work. I need to acknowledge my pain and work to forgive. The person who was mean to you at school, lazy in group homework project, too blunt in their language, against school referendums to raise teacher salaries, flies the Confederate flag, they are the other. They are the Gentiles. And they too can hear the word of love. We can do it. You can do it. Today is a grand day outside, and every creature has a reason to shout with joy. The rivers are clapping. The hills are singing with spring. Remember that nice thing you thought about it? Remember it again. And smile. Smile. and show the world the love in your heart. You do brighten my day. Thank you. Peace be with you.